Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is the Straight Wives Talk Show, the hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, thank you so much for listening, and how are you, Misty?
I'm doing very well tonight. How are you, Bonnie?
I'm trying to fight an upper respiratory virus, so I'll try to mute myself when I have to cough so I don't really scare everybody away.
Okay, you won't scare us, I promise.
You haven't heard my cough yet. So, Misty, I understand that you have your grieving workshop start tomorrow. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you. I'm doing a workshop starting tomorrow. It's a four-week workshop, and it'll be every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Zone. And we'll cover the topic of grief very in-depth. I created a Saturday seminar back in March, I believe it was, about understanding grief for straight wives. It was very popular. I got a lot of emails and a lot of requests. So this is one of the largest things I feel that we go through is the grief process when we discover that our husband is gay and just the whole journey. It's a grief journey. It's very similar to a death, but we've often discussed how it can be worse than a death because you've got the aftermath to deal with. So what this workshop will do, we'll just discuss, I have a model that relates to straight wives, and we'll discuss the different tips, the different activities you can do, because it's really easy to get stuck in grief. And when you get stuck and you don't move, your life, your whole life just gets stagnant. And sometimes this can just be the little bit of wind beneath your wings that you need to just fly a little bit, or it can just pull you out of getting stuck. And the great part about the workshops, my favorite part, is it enables straight wives from all over the world to come together. And, Bonnie, you know how important that is. That's one of the most important parts of the healing journey. And even though you're connected by voice only, every time after I do a workshop, I get wonderful emails about how these women, it was just so healing for them to connect with other women that were going through the same thing, facing the same issue. So it's just, it's very healing in and of itself. And the other thing I'd like to mention that I don't think I have made very clear, the great part about any of the workshops and seminars I offer, you can attend these anonymously. I have many women to come on that are still married and they're in the process of going through a divorce. And oftentimes they don't want people to know their name, and we can all understand that. It's hard to get out there. So I have a lot of women that will come in. They'll either use their middle name, not a last name, or their maiden name. So you can get creative with it, and it's very anonymous. We always respect people's privacy.
You can even call yourself Lady X, right?
Absolutely. Or
Lady Straight.
Whatever you want to be.
How's that?
There you go. Whatever you want to be, you can call yourself, and that's what we'll refer to you as. And you get to join in from the comforts and privacy of your own home. So that's the beauty of it. So if you want any information on it, you can email me, and my email address is MISTILYNNHALL@AOL.com, and that's just my name spelled out. So if you have any questions, please let me know. And it's not too late to join in. Send me an email, and we'll get you there. I think it'll be one of the most important workshops of this year.
Thank you.
So thank you, Bonnie. Thank you.
And one of the wonderful things about after you go through grieving is the road to recovery. And that's what our show is focusing on tonight. And for those women who received my monthly newsletter, you know, this past week when it went out, there was a beautiful recovery map in there from one of our support group members, Wendy. And we invited Wendy to come with us tonight because nothing to me quite articulated this map the way she did it, talking about all the different phases that we as straight wives go through. So I'm going to see if I can get Wendy on the show with us.
Okay.
Is that you, Wendy?
I'm here.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. A little virus. I'm trying not to cough into your ear.
Okay.
But I do want to mention if any of our listeners would like to call in, please take down our number. It's area code 646-716-4444. 4893. So, Wendy, it's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I'm a little nervous. I've come a long way.
You certainly have. And maybe you can just tell us a little bit about your story, how long you were married and when you found out.
Okay. All right. I was married 23 years to a very good man, I thought. And he was the first one and only. I didn't marry till I was about 27, 28 years old. I was not a big dater or anything through college or after that. So I guess I was feeling a little desperate, but seemed to be a very, very good man, gentleman.
What year did you get married in?
1985.
Okay. Those were in the days before we knew about these things.
Right. Exactly. So everything was pretty good, but just like all the other women I've heard from, you know, things just started going south. And particularly for me, he became a workaholic, and just work was always a priority. He was an up-and-coming band director in a state where that's a very big deal in high school. And so very, very talented, very skilled. His father did the same thing. And so I went along with it at first and, you know, kind of got caught up in all of the successes that he had. But as my children came along, I realized that that was becoming more and more a priority, and the children and I were not. And, of course, I blamed myself for that. And I gradually started falling apart, but like all of us other women, we start thinking I must be doing something wrong. I must need to change. I need to do something different. I need to find a time when he's not so busy and those kind of things. And I, you know.
Right, we start internalizing the blame rather than
thinking
there's something wrong
with
him.
Right, and it just, the abandonment of my children was very upsetting, and I tried to fill in the gaps as best I could and tried to help them understand, you know. The other factor that came in with for him was he grew up in a very demanding household himself, and so I understood his need to have all the success to feel better about himself. He had very, very judgmental parents who really kind of put him on a path without his choice. And so I understood, and I had sympathy and empathy and all those things for what he was going through, and felt that, you know, he couldn't help it. But little did I know that there were other things that I didn't know that he was fighting, and other demons, and those were the things that were really driving him to have to be better and better and better and better. And even when he got to the top, that wasn't enough. And so I got very involved in understanding workaholism, and that helped me realize it wasn't me. But
now, did the suspicion of gay ever come into your mind?
No, really didn't. And he had been engaged before I met him, so that, you know, never crossed my mind, except for the fact that I couldn't understand why he never was affectionate, never wanted me. And I went through the things. I knew he was too busy to have another woman on the side. I was very involved in what he was doing, so I felt that really was not, you know, an issue. So I couldn't understand.
Did he ever try
and
to bring it up?
It crossed my mind, but I immediately dismissed it because there was none of that flamboyancy that I had thought there would be, you know.
And did you ever talk to him about why there was the lack of affection?
Yes, and it was just, well, you know, it's not you, it's me, but that's all he would say. And I will say, I was talking to a friend of mine about, before telling her I was going to do this tonight, and saying that I really was lucky in the fact that he never raised his voice to me, he never put me down, he never criticized me. And for those reasons, I didn't feel justified in feeling like I should move on, because, you know, he it was a there were some sociopathic things. I mean, I was manipulated, but it was in a very charming, well, he was the victim, you know, I can't help it, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm grateful that I didn't have that to further, you know, lower my self-esteem, but I think it made it take longer for me to realize what was going on.
Exactly.
You know.
And that's usually the problem.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't see what's coming at you.
Yeah, it was a shock. It was a shock.
So how did you discover what happened?
I was checking the computer periodically, the history, because I had a teenage son. And I just was, you hear these things, how you kind of keep tabs on your kids, and I saw some things one fall, really nothing really bad, nothing even homosexual, but it was a little startling, and I immediately thought it was my son.
Uh-huh.
And so I confronted him, and I told my husband, we've got to put the parental controls, we need to, you know, put the stop on this, and my son was very upset, and well, how could you accuse me of this, and I said, because you're a teenage boy, you know, I'm not upset with you, I'm just trying to control things here. And
uh-huh.
So I still to this day don't know whether that, you know, what happened, but my husband was very cooperative about taking care of all this. And it wasn't until several months later that I checked again, and that's when I saw gay pornography. And I was stunned because I knew it wasn't my son. And I figured out a way to check the history when my son had not been on the computer.
Uh-huh.
And so I knew that had to be it. And I confronted him, and he denied it and denied it and denied it. And I just kept at it because, as I said to you earlier, not for a second was I going to live with this. Not for a second.
Now, when he denied it to you, did you feel a sense of relief, or you didn't believe him?
No, I did feel a sense of relief, like, finally, the pieces were being put together. Now this makes sense.
Even though he was denying it, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a good liar.
So
no,
did he finally come clean with the truth?
After I pressured him. And in fact, I don't know, this hasn't been mentioned recently. There, you have a letter on your website, I don't even know if you still do, a letter that you have written that I used I gave him. It's how to come out to your wife.
Mm-hmm.
I put that letter under his pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And just really trying to help him come clean because he has such a emotional baggage from his childhood on, you know, that. And I think finally he wrote me a letter, and he thought he was bisexual, so I knew I already had that ready. I knew that was going to come from what you had said. And I got into therapy, and I suggested he go, and he did go one session.
Uh-huh.
By himself, and I went back to my doctor after that, and I said, well, I just need to know, I mean, is he, I know you can't tell me anything professionally, but, you know, is he on the fence with this, or is this, you know, a flat-out, full-fledged gay, and the doctors led me to believe that there was no question,
uh-huh.
He had no question in his mind, and that was a shock to me. Because he tried to make it hem-haw like he wasn't sure and all that, but he told the doctor that, you know.
Well, I'm sure
doctor
he acted on
no,
it, right?
Pardon me?
I'm sure he had acted on it.
I don't know. At that point, I didn't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see how, but I really did not at that point.
How about at this point?
Oh, well, yeah. Now, after that, I think... He felt very relieved to me, and we had some very good conversations.
Uh-huh.
And I think he felt a great sense of relief that it was out.
Uh-huh.
And I led him to believe that I still wanted to be a family, although I wasn't going to live with him, and I was going to divorce him. We would still have a family and that kind of thing. He was still his his children's father and that kind of thing. I think he was relieved that I didn't throw him out of the house that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I remember a few months out, and we decided we would go to the end of the school year. And that this was the summer, go to the end of the next school year and do a mutual divorce, and then that would be it. But in the meantime, I think he went a little crazy. And I remember writing to you saying that he had been, you know, AOL, or MIA, I guess. He would go visit his parent, his mother, and be it would 5-hour drive would turn into a 10-hour drive. And things like that. Or and I'd call him at 10:30 at night. Where you know, how come you're not back? Well, you know, I'm just taking my time coming home and those kind of things. So I remember writing to you saying, okay, Bonnie, these things that happen in the parks and in the roadsides and these kind of things, is this really common? You know, I just couldn't picture this at all in my head. I just couldn't fathom it. And, you know, but in my gut, I knew he was missing big chunks of time. So you wrote back and said, absolutely, it's common. And within a month of that, I think, he ended up being arrested. And that's a whole nother ball game, but that was another nightmare. He was arrested at a roadside park, and it just threw me, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Was it in the newspapers there?
No, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully not. Became very close to that. It was just a nightmare. He was a very high-profile person, still
mm-hmm.
is. And my son was involved in, he was actually in his band at the school, and he was 16 at the time. So
mm-hmm.
it just was a nightmare. And I can't believe I got through it. To tell you the truth.
And you're not the first person, you know, who's part of our support network. This has happened to a number of our women.
I remember reading about someone else, and
mm-hmm.
it was, also involved in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, this is just amazing that this whole world is out there that I had no idea. I had no idea that this even went on.
It's a world unfamiliar to all of us.
And I was just, as I said before, so grateful that I found your network so early on that I didn't, you know, let it fester. And it helped me to know that I wasn't alone, that this was a common thing out there and that I could make it.
Yeah. Well, moving along, Wendy.
Yeah.
I was just so blown over by the recovery map that you have.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you just articulated everything so well because, you know, I think that all women go through just about everything on this map, but
mm-hmm.
they don't know how to quite put it down in words the way
mm-hmm.
that you did.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you could talk a little bit now about the different phases because you've already
okay.
gone through phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3.
Mm-hmm.
And they do go back and forth. I'm aware of that.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's what prompted me to put this all down on paper was when I felt like I had come a long way, you know, a year out of divorce, and then suddenly around Valentine's Day I just kind of fell apart and I couldn't understand, you know, what had happened. I'd come so far. How could I be all upset again?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you reassuring me that you do kind of go in and out, and you're really not that far away from what's happened. And I was just feeling like, okay, I've gotten through this. I'm supposed to be okay now. Everybody's expecting me to be, you know, back in the swim of things, and I'm not. And so that's what prompted me to kind of put down from where I've come, you know, all the things that I have gotten through and sorted all out. So that's really what this was. I just...
And don't you feel that's so true? And I think Misty will attest to that, that people expect us to just get over it.
Yeah.
They can't understand why we're
right.
not just getting over it. Right, Misty?
Right.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think is so cruel to someone going through a situation such as this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we often talk about in, you know, counseling and coaching, how
mm-hmm.
this is like it's like layers of an onion. You just have
mm-hmm.
to peel back layers at a time, and there's no time limit on when you peel those layers back.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing to look for, I think, is, you know, ask yourself, am I stuck?
Mm-hmm.
And when you find yourself being stuck somewhere, that's when you got to look for some type of support, or, you know, or try something different. Obviously, if what you're doing is not working, try something different. And I must say, reading over your model, I'm going to give you kudos as well. As a professional, you know, coach for Straight Wives, and personally having experienced what I went through, it's a brilliant model. And I encourage anyone to get a copy of Bonnie's newsletter to go over the model. And I just think you did a wonderful job putting this together.
Well, thank you. I do need to preface that by saying back in 1994, I went through a major depression and breakdown before I knew any of this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, I was basically suicidal, and I had to quit my teaching job and go into, you know, major therapy, and I just fell apart, and I gradually, with the support of family, and I did get on some medicine for a while just to help me get there. I kind of had gone through a whole recovery process there, and in the middle of all this, and we did get real stuck in therapy, and I couldn't figure out how to get out of what I was doing, and little did we know what was going on. My doctor was stunned when I told her what had happened, and she said, okay, well, that's why you were so stuck. You didn't know what was going on, and now you do. So I think having gone through a recovery already, this helped me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I could come out of something because I came out of that.
And I'd like to add something there, Wendy. Mm-hmm. You know, when you said that, you know, you went through this, but you didn't know what was going on, and then you looked back,
mm-hmm.
and I think this illustrates perfectly how I've said on the show before, if we don't register that our husbands are, you know, if they're gay, if we don't register it consciously, I do truly believe sometimes we register this subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
One way or another, I think we pick it up, little things, and maybe we don't know it consciously, but I think it goes to show what it can do to us.
Yes.
Do you agree with that, with what you went through?
It broke my spirit. It just broke my spirit.
Because you don't even know what the enemy is here.
Yeah, and
you know,
you
don't know what you're dealing with. It's like that Alice in Wonderland story. You know, you're in the upside down, topsy turvy world.
Yeah, and I never could feel that I was a priority. I just became so small in his life, and yet I was doing everything. Raising the kids and following him along to all these things and, you know, being there for support. But I just, my spirit broke, and I could see it in my kids. And, I'm grateful that I had hard proof and that I did have support to come out of it. Now, I will tell you, there are very, very few of my friends know the complete truth. I just, because of the nature of his profession and the community and my own kids, so there are a lot of my friends that just feel that I'm recovering from a divorce, and they knew him, and they're not surprised, just the way his workaholism. So,
Don't be surprised that they know he's gay, too.
Well, I guess so, maybe
because
so.
Because a lot of people know it before we do.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
But getting back to your recovery map, let's talk first about, you know, the phase one, the shock.
Yes, I'm looking at it right
and
now.
The awe, and the nightmare you can't wake up from. So that's phase one that I think that all of us go through when you first find out.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and you notice that they're just one word, because it's such craziness that you can't even, you just jump from one to one to one to one. One of these things, and you don't even have time to think about it, and you don't really want to think about it. You're just kind of bouncing around, and I think that's kind of what I was trying to portray in there, is just one word thoughts and one word feelings, because you can't go past that. Kind of like what I said on there, no dots connect. You're just bouncing around.
Exactly. So can you read through the different...
Oh, you want me to read through them? Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Shock, betrayal, fear, questioning, no trust, clues missed, clues seen, relief, confusion, fragile, disbelief, shame, anger, despair, weak, blindsided, no dots connect, secrecy, crisis, foolish, very foolish. I felt very foolish that I hadn't, that I'd missed it. Inadequate to cope, embarrassment, deer in the headlights, can't think beyond the feelings, worry, worry, worry in so many ways and directions, overwhelmed, can't breathe, isolation, and so alone. And I think that sums it up.
Yeah, and that was like the first 6 months, and I think that sums it up for so many of us. We just feel like we can't breathe, we want to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't. Mm-hmm. We just feel so embarrassed. We feel so
mm-hmm.
ashamed
mm-hmm.
that we're not going to feel stupid. We were blindsided. How could we not know this? Or with
mm-hmm.
a man for all these
mm-hmm.
years?
Yes.
You know, where was I? Why couldn't I see it?
Yes, yes. I really went through that. How could I have missed this? But, you know, I just kept going back to the stereotypical characteristics, and none of them were there. And so...
And don't you think that that is part of the problem,
mm-hmm.
that we're all bowled over by the stereotypical television movie type of
right.
a person, that if somebody
right.
isn't swishy and somebody isn't, you know, effeminate,
right.
then we have to assume that they're not gay.
Right.
You know, we're not
right.
looking at the gay football players, and we're not looking at the gay sports figures,
mm-hmm.
you know, gay
mm-hmm.
policemen. You know,
right.
we're looking at the comedians that are on television acting stereotypically gay.
Right.
And that's part of the problem.
And he is in the music profession, which, you know, typically, apparently, you know, a high percentage or whatever. And he did have coworkers and colleagues that I knew were gay, but they were very, very, it was very quiet. Nobody talked about it.
Did he talk about gay at all, how he felt about it? Regarding his coworkers or...
No, it was just something he didn't talk about. Because
uh-huh.
I remember asking one of his colleagues, you know, is so-and-so married? And no, and just kind of, so I knew he was embarrassed. He was not, he didn't think it was a good way to be.
Uh-huh. All right, well, then you moved into phase two, which
yes.
is surface acceptance.
And this was when I had to deal with, I had to move forward because of what had happened when he got into legal trouble, the money started going. And
now, when he got into the legal trouble, how much after when you found out that did that happen?
I found out in May, and that was in November.
Okay.
It was a month after I had told the kids that we were going to divorce. I had been advised that I needed to start planting seeds on that just to get
mm-hmm.
the kids to adjust to it. So within a month of my telling the kids, this happened. Now, thank goodness I had already told the kids because they knew it wasn't because of this incident that I did it and left
mm-hmm.
their dad in crisis or whatever. But, yeah, he just kind of went nuts, I guess. And so I was advised that, you know, now I realized how sneaky he could be, how behind the scenes he could be operating. I just was afraid about the finances. So I was told that instead of doing a mutual divorce, I needed to go file immediately.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I had to do, and that was a nightmare because after the incident, he was put on leave at home. He was home all of a sudden. All the time. And so I had to go in the file cabinets and find all the documents and all the, you know, all the paperwork that's needed for divorce. And
was he taking responsibility for this? In other words, with the divorce.
Because,
you know, a lot of times we hear that, well, you know, this is what gay husbands say. I mean, well, first they blame their wives, and then they say, well, it takes two to make a marriage or two to make
uh-huh.
a divorce. And, of course, my philosophy is it only takes one if the husband's gay. I mean,
right.
you're dealing with an unknown quantity there.
Yeah.
So I think that the husbands have the legal responsibility. They should be paying for everything.
Well, no, he was very financially careful, so we had good savings and things like that. But when this whole thing, he understood why I wanted to divorce him. He understood that, but he made it into a victim deal.
That he was a victim?
Yeah, that he was a victim, that I was leaving him.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know.
That's a lot of the sociopathic behavior that we talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so
the whole arrest thing, he was totally denied all that. He totally denied he had been done wrong. He was telling everybody how he had been done wrong and how dare they do this to him and what trouble he's in, and now he has to pay all this money to defend himself and, you know, all.
Did he lose his job?
Did not lose his job. He was put on leave until they investigated, and it happened to be in a small town, another county than where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Very small small town operation that moved very slowly. So he thought it was all going to be over with within a month, and it lasted almost a year.
Wow.
And he was put on leave, and they can't do anything until the district won't do anything until they have criminal proof. So he was lucky. He was paid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was told to just let him hang on, living in the house, and, you know, do all that, because financially you're better off that way. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, I went in and I had to file behind his back, and he had to be served papers, and that was very, very difficult for me. But
very.
That's how it had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that phase two is where I'm just making decisions and doing things and going through the motions and not really letting myself feel anything, just getting it done. And
were you kind of out of the shock phase by then?
Yeah, I think I think so. It was more at this point. I was more intent on how can I get through this, get my kids through this with the least difficulty.
And could you go down the list of things?
Yeah, having to handle, and some of this, yeah, some of this lasted about a year, so some of these are the beginning of it, and some of these
mm-hmm.
are at the end of that year, but having to handle everything, overwhelmed, but in a new way. Overwhelmed now in how am I going to deal with all this? Making choices alone, dealing with the nitty-gritty of separation and filing for divorce, that was totally foreign to me. Dealing with accounts, paying the bills, dealing with housing, breaking the news to the kids. And when I read that again, and that news was just the divorce news, not anything else. Dissolving joint accounts, getting utilities in your name, deciding how you're going to wear your rings, deciding who should and should not know, deciding how much to tell, attempts to negotiate with him, peeling away from him. I think that is very good visual there, because that's really what you're doing. You're peeling away. And it seems from the outside to somebody else it would be easy, but it's not.
Do you mean in an emotional way?
In all kinds of ways.
Finding your individuality?
Yeah, and he had paid all the bills. He had done all the financial stuff, and I had not done that in 20-some years. So
mm-hmm.
that was very scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at all of your belongings in a new way. You know, what are you going to keep? What are you going to let him take? Forcing yourself to put one foot in front of the other. Weary of it all, but it's just begun. Boy, that really says it all to me.
Mm-hmm.
keeping busy so as not to feel. Establishing new routines. Taking on more part-time work. That's been a big factor for me, because I had to quit my teaching job because of my emotional instability, and I became a secretary. So I cut my salary about in half.
Wow.
And that's what I'm still doing. Facing family and close friends. I told my family the entire everything in writing. They live all across the country. So I just had to tell them, just lay it all out. And that was therapeutic for me.
And you told them why?
I told them everything.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I told my family everything.
Mm-hmm.
Finding a new normal, being careful about keeping the kids protected, watching what you say about him. Boy, I had to be really careful on that, too.
That's what I call the learning how to bite your tongue phase.
Yes, Yes, and I know you've touched on that, and that's just so important. I come from a child development background, and I just, this whole time, I just kept thinking, you know, I mean, I know I can't protect them forever, but I knew that, you know, they were watching everything I was doing, everything I was saying about their dad, all the dealings, they were watching that, and I just felt like they need, you know, he has done some jerky things, but he's a human being, and so I had to be respectful, and that was hard, but I felt like that was important to my kids in the long run. Resentment about everything, and I've lived 27 years in resentment, 20 whatever years in resentment, and looking forward, but with dread, because I just didn't know how I was going to do it.
Right, because everything in your life has to change.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though people say, well, change is sometimes good, that's because they're not changing. You know, when you think you have what's good, all of a sudden it's being taken away from you.
Yeah.
So you don't always view it as good.
Yeah, and you know, you said this before, where they knew all along, you know, that this might happen or whatever, and they're adjusted to it. And, it was just so new to me. And...
Right, he had 27 years to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, and I still would like to sit down someday and you know, when did you really know this? You know, really, when did you know this? And I don't know if I'll ever get an answer, but...
No, but I'm sure he knew it before he married you.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he was hoping that by marrying
I
you,
really do
go
think
away.
That. Yes, I really do think that. I really do. Especially based on his family background, that, you know, he had to be the good son and only child and, you know... put on a good, you know, do the right thing. So anyway, that was that phase I would sum up as, well, as I said, you're accepting it on the surface. You're accepting what you have to do. You have to swim so you don't sink, but you're not really emotionally dealing with anything at that point.
You're just getting through the days.
Right. And you know, to throw in there, I also survived a hurricane in the middle of all this.
Oh, my God.
I had a tree in my garage, and I had water inside my house, and that was about a week after he'd moved out. So that was a whole other bag of things to deal with.
It's hard being on your own, you know. Even if it's hard being with someone, at least you know that person's there to give you some help.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
Now that
right.
you do everything on your own, it is scary. I know that as a single mother, it was scary to me.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of these things I had to learn because he was never home. I had to put a mailbox in by myself. I had to, you know, fix the toilets by myself because he was never there. So I had learned how to do, but it's very different than when you really have nobody to fall back on. That's different. So...
So how long did you stay in that phase?
I guess about a year, I guess. Yeah, it's kind of hard to put your finger on it, but this is kind of a summary, I guess. And then the next phase was more, I think, just in the last 6 months, where I kind of got through all that yucky stuff. Divorce was finalized. The kid, you know, he moved out on his own. I'm starting to pay the bills and figure out how to do all that again, and that I'm going to make it financially. Thankfully, my house is paid for. I starting to swim a little bit and realize that, you know, I really will make this. And
no,
then,
is he helping you financially at this point?
No. He only had to give child support through the last day of till graduation of my son in high school, which was 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So last summer it stopped. And fortunately, we did have a college investment fund for my son. My daughter was finishing college, that's what he took money out of for his legal thing. So in the divorce settlement, that was one of my top things, is that money is not going to get touched and it's going to stay for my son's college. And so I will say that the divorce mediator did say she hadn't seen a divorce that was without debt in about 10 years. So I did have that going for me. We had no debt. But, I was making it okay on the black and white, the paying the bills and those kind of things. And this, I think, is when emotionally I started facing things. And I guess this kind of goes along with the grieving process, you know, where you go through the steps. And now I know when my mother died many years ago, it didn't really hit me till about a month after the funeral that it was very strange how all of a sudden, a month later, emotionally I had to process it. So I think that's kind of what this third phase is, where you're just realizing that things are still there, and
mm-hmm.
and what you think you're supposed to be through with it, and you're not. So what do? You know, and it's hard because some of my friends they don't know everything, and it's getting harder and harder for that part. It's harder and harder for me not to be completely honest with all of my friends, and I think that's going to be coming up probably this summer. I'm going to be able to disclose to more and more people because I can handle it better.
Now, are any of your friends still friendly with him?
No, more just on a professional basis. We became, you know how you talk about how you become more and more isolated?
Mm-hmm.
Even though he never raised his voice and never put me down or never that, I did find that we did become more and more isolated, and we didn't have friends over and things like that. So really, we didn't have family friends anymore. I had my friends at work, and he had his, although I was friends with a lot of his colleagues through his work, and they were really supportive of me. They were very supportive of me. So I think maybe they knew before I knew.
Most people usually do.
You know, so I forgot now what your question was about.
I'd say that most people usually know before we know.
Yeah, could be. But anyway, in this phase was where I was having to just kind of come to grips with a lot of things and felt a lot of pressure that, okay, well, you're a year out now, you know, time to move on forward, you're going to get married and all that kind of stuff. And I just was no way ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want me to go ahead and read that?
Yeah, well, why don't you do it?
Okay. This is what I call wrestling with reality, and I really think that it's a wrestle. It's a struggle back and forth with. I don't want this new life that I have, kind of thing. But it's here, so I call it the mountain is still there to climb, and having to think, is this all there is? Pressure to be over it by now. Less family rallying support, and that's not a negative thing. They're just not hanging in there as closely as they were before, so you start feeling that. Weary of stage two. I'm weary, but I'm ready to go back to handling less, but without him. And I really was shocked to feel this way, that, you know, maybe it wasn't so bad. Maybe I should just go back. Not that I was going to do it, but I can see how.
I think we all go through that, Wendy. You know, we always think, well, was it really that bad? You
know, right.
We feel it sorts of, you know, like when we feel like all the pressure's coming into us.
And the longer he's away from the house, a lot of that stuff that was so hard to live with is not there anymore. So
right. You
forget.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's okay, the next thing is stuck, no roadmap to follow, uncertainty, which way is forward. That
before
really
you go
is.
On, I think that that one is just so important. There is no roadmap to follow, even though
mm-hmm.
you've now put that really good
mm-hmm.
one together.
Right.
But, you know, the point is that nobody tells us what we're going to have to go through and how long it's going to take us
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what are the results going to be, because even though all these situations are so similar, they're also so different.
Yes.
For each woman who has to go through it.
Yes. Yes.
And because it's such an odd, unique situation, even though it affects millions of us, you know, but we do feel so isolated and alone because, first of all, we've been isolated in our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're isolated by society because we can't tell a lot of people.
Right.
So, you know, there is no roadmap to follow for sure.
Yes, and that's the reality that I'm wrestling with.
Mm-hmm.
that you want someone to tell you what to do and there isn't. Even you, Bonnie, can't give us this prescription exactly. So,
no, because every woman, like I say, has to
look
at her own
yeah,
way.
Yeah, exactly. Uncertainty, which way is forward? That's really true to me. I don't know which way is forward. Anger came back. I don't want this new life. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to see. This is a big factor for me. I did not want him to see me dealing with everything and realizing, oh, well, she's just having a great life, you know. She's
mm-hmm.
off the, I'm off the hook. I did not want that to happen because I was still mad that I'd been put in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and early on he said, oh, well, you're just going to be fine. You know, you're just going to find somebody. And I was just like, you don't, you know, he'll
yeah,
never understand.
Clueless, right.
Right. Sadness resurfaces. That was the part when I was, oh, Valentine's and all that, and realizing that maybe there will never be someone, never, never in my life, and that just was very, very sad to me. Wasted time, I realized that.
Look how many years you put into that marriage.
Yes, and about half my life, about half my life.
And those are
yeah.
years you can never get back.
Right. Fear of the unknown, there's that map again, roadmap that nobody has.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of questions. Do I tell the kids the whole truth or not? Who should be the one to tell? How should this be done? What, you know, the timing and all that. And do I tell everybody else or not? Or, you know, and just heavier questions that I was allowed to put off earlier when I was dealing with all the nitty-gritty, and now I'm having to really, they're staring at me, and I've got to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Should I sell the house? Should I downsize? Should I get a job that has more pay? Should I go get retrained into something else? And as we said earlier, some of the bad stuff has faded, and you're almost tempted to go back. It would be easier in some ways. Dealing with the yard and the bushes and the, you know, everything that has to be done, and it's just a lot, cleaning out the garage and all that. And you're lonely, but you're afraid to get out there. At least I am. And trying to move forward, but it's just so hard. And, you know, that just kind of sums it up for me, and that's kind of where I am still right now. But I feel the light, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that's
well. Before we get to stage four, we have another caller. I think.
Oh, good.
I'll ask you a question. Hold on, let's see who's calling us. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Bonnie and Wendy.
Hi. Hello, ladies. My name's Kelly. I'm calling from Michigan.
Hi, Kelly.
Okay.
Hello. I've been divorced from my gay husband for 5 years now.
Hmm.
And I have two boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was married 13 years, and I was with him for 19. So
did
what
they,
Wendy
a
just...
A lot of the phases that Wendy was telling you that she went through?
Yes and no. When I found out, when I realized that my husband was gay, it was a long process and a long... He didn't admit it to himself for a long time, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much loneliness. By the time I realized, and I had found out from snooping on the computer,
mm-hmm.
There were some hang-up calls. He had suddenly had a separate cell phone, you know, with a separate bill. And thing, you know, you're thinking he's having an affair, and then
right.
The usual things. But when I did find out, it was more of a relief.
Mm-hmm.
I felt free. Like, you know what, this is absolutely not my fault. All
yeah.
these years,
yeah.
all these years that he's been dumping on me, and I, no matter what I did,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have turned the world upside down to try to make him happy.
Yep.
And I just certainly couldn't. And, of course, him sleeping on the couch and no good reason given to me and, you know,
did he blame you for his unhappiness, Kelly?
I'm sorry?
Did he ever blame you for his unhappiness?
Oh, my gosh, it was constant. I mean, the war in Iraq was my fault,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, I knew that I was a good mother and that I was a good person and that I was, you know, faithful to my wedding vows. And I just was beating myself up against the wall, like, what can I do to please this man?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really was when I realized, finally, you know, he, after confronting him with the things that I found him looking at and all these other things, and he fell to his knees and he cried, and I'm not gay and I'm not going to be gay. And I said, and I specifically said, well, do you want to do this? You know, I was talking about things that he might have fantasized about. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, it's intriguing to me. And I said, you're gay. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I'm not. And I said, you know what? It really was a relief. I didn't go through a lot of that. I felt free. Mm-hmm. I did, because I had spent so much time figuring, trying to, what was wrong with me? I'm too fat. I'm not good enough in bed. I'm not this. I'm not that. It was all gone. It was gone. It was tough. It was difficult, you know, but it was devastating, but it so much made sense. So many more things made sense.
I agree with you on that. And I'm now enjoying that freedom part now.
The guilt that I had of how am I not pleasing him was just lifted from me.
Exactly.
And I'm very Catholic, you know, with a Catholic background, and that guilt of I can't have a divorce was just gone. It was gone. Like, of course I can have a divorce because it's okay. You know, that had a lot to do with why I hung on so long, was just, you know, I wasn't going to be divorced. It's not, I promised God I would be here.
Right.
And it was very, very scary, though, very, because, I mean, I worked part-time. My kids were 9 and 7.
Wow.
At the time. And I, you know, I ended up with being able to handle things, you know, financially, but it was difficult. I got a lot out of my divorce. You know, so.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and
well, I think
now
have financial ability that makes it so much easier to move ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Wendy was saying,
stuck.
My ex-husband he wasn't rich by any means, but he was very good with money. We didn't have a lot of debt, and so that was a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the hardest part I think I have now is I have a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and it's two boys. And, you know, middle school is a tough age. You know? I mean, everybody's gay and you're a fag, and that just gets thrown around middle school, like, you know. And they have a real difficult, the oldest one especially has a difficult time seeing dad and the boyfriend hold hands and things like that.
So they both know he's gay?
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened was he wasn't telling them for a while, and then finally I called him up. The problem is my ex-husband's narcissistic. He was diagnosed as narcissistic, so there was a lot of worse things than the gay. But I eventually had called him up about 3 years ago, and I said, listen, if you do not sit these kids down and tell them, I will, and I think you would rather have it coming from you than me. So I'm giving you till Sunday to do it, because they were coming home every weekend saying, Mom, this, I saw this, and Mom, this is weird, and Mom, that was weird. And you know, I wanted to tell him, but I thought it was their dad's place to tell him.
Right.
So he finally did, and, you know, my oldest one knew anyway. But he still has a hard time. He's 14, and, boy, it's really difficult. And I did tell him. I said, listen, you know, it would be best that you not tell anybody at school.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody. He's in a, you know, he's in an age, right? You know, eighth graders are tough
yes,
people.
And for boys, I think it's especially difficult for boys. As
much harder for boys than it is for girls.
Yes.
Because, you know, because kids are cruel. And when they see that, you know, boys have a gay father, they point a finger and say, well, you must be gay too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, about a month ago, my 11-year-old came home. Apparently, the boys had a conversation in the car, and my older son was explaining to my younger son what dad does with his boyfriend, getting a little saying things maybe he shouldn't. And then my older son said to his dad when dad came back in the car, do you do that? Tell my little brother. And dad said yes, and my little one came home, and you know, I had a talk with him. I said, you know, your brother told me this happened. And he started crying, and he said, Mom, does that mean I'm gay? Does that mean he really
right.
didn't think
that's,
about it?
That's one of the big problems with teenage boys. They really believe that if my dad's like that, then I'm going to be like that.
And you know what I said to him? I really couldn't believe that he said that. I really, you know, but he really broke down and said, I don't want to be gay. And I said, listen, I am fat and you are a little twig. It just shows you I'm your mother and you're not like me. You know, you're not going to be like your dad. And if you are, then you are. But
right.
you
yeah.
don't know that now. You're in sixth grade.
Yeah,
and,
still trying to figure
you know,
it out. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a journey. I'll tell you, I'm remarried now. And, I got a very masculine. I'm sorry?
How's that marriage going?
It's going really good. I mean, it's been a year and a half, and I got a very nice, very masculine man. And boy, I tell you, I love those masculine things now.
Mm.
You know, I really appreciate those. I mean, he's a slob, and he leaves his clothes laying around, and you know, it gets on my nerves. But then I think, geez, that's totally opposite of 14 years of what I lived with, and
mm-hmm.
you know. So,
now, did
you know,
it take you a while to start being able to trust guys again after this experience?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't trust the Pope,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, you know, I've had other issues with cheating. You know, I ended up with HPV.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very difficult. I mean, I, of course, went right to a doctor and got tested for everything, and it came back, of course, on a Pap, and now I have issues with having, you know, that could develop into cervical cancer. And
yeah.
So well,
is that from your gay husband?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm not exactly sure. It could be from my new husband.
Uh-huh.
But I really, you know, there's really no way of knowing, you know.
Uh-huh.
So.
So how long have you been remarried?
I've been remarried a year and a half.
Okay.
So
would you say overall it's going well?
Overall, it's going very well, yes, it is. And
the boys have adjusted to him?
Boys love their stepdad, yeah. They do love their father, of course. They have issues with their father and his narcissism. That bothers them, I think, more than the gay thing, you know. But the gay thing is hard. It's very hard. My little one, he's 11, and he's still he's a very immature 11-year-old, so he's kind of oblivious to a lot of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But my 14-year-old, man, he struggles with it. He really does. He
yeah.
gets worried about his dad showing up at things with the boyfriend. And his dad's been through 8 men in 5 years that I know.
Oh, my goodness.
5 years that that's only the ones I know of.
Oh.
So.
And that's what's so hard for them is that, you know, they have to fear that their fathers are going to show up with boyfriends.
And they have no support. They don't have a support group like we do, you know?
No, they don't. And the thing is, he does have a friend at his dad's house, a boy that lives across the street who's 15 years old. And so
mm-hmm.
he was asking me, he said, do you think I can tell Danny? And I said, you know what? I think if you feel like you want to tell Danny, then yeah, you can. You know, Danny doesn't go to your school. He lives in a different school district.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, they're 8-9 miles away. So Danny will never... You know, I was just concerned about anybody at school finding out because,
sure.
you know, once they find out, then they'll put the brothers together and then the other one, you know, and
yeah.
so he
cruel.
Did.
I mean, because they're cruel. There's no way around that.
Yeah. So he did tell the 15-year-old boy across the street, and
mm-hmm.
It helped him, I think, a lot. I also took him to the priest. My son wanted to go talk to our priest.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for that, and I thought the priest did a great job. You know, he told him, you know, You can't control what your dad does, and it's not up to you to judge it. It's up to God, and, you know, your job is to love him and listen to him and be a good son. And that was good, you know.
That's great.
Does he have a lot of contact with your son?
My ex-husband?
Mm-hmm.
He does. Yeah, he sees my children.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, there's always a story. You know, they go there for, like, every other weekend, and then they're there in the summer, like, maybe a week at a time, and something strange always happens. That's the bad thing,
uh-huh.
you know. Bunch of friends were over, dad's friends were over, and they were giving everybody wedgies in the backyard. Now, my ex-husband, he's 47.
Uh-huh.
His boyfriends are all in their
20s.
Yeah, that's
really rough on kids.
Oh, I mean... Yeah, the 24 years old, 26 years old. These kids that he's dating are old enough, you know, that he could be their father.
Uh-huh.
And
that's
trying to make up for lost time, it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't think he's really the happiest. He tries to say, you know, but we don't talk very much, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was, I'll tell you, it was hard. It was very hard, but I really felt that sense of... You know, there's nothing that I did wrong. I really felt a sense of, I did feel the waste of time. I sure felt that. And I sure felt, I really don't know if he knew it when we got married. He was 27 and I was 23.
No, he definitely knew it, but that doesn't mean that he could accept it. But he knew he had attractions to men at 27. And to have already been with him by the time he was 27, but he was hoping if he loved you, those feelings would go away. Because he's still want to be gay.
I think my ex-husband, I read some of your stuff, Bonnie, and I thought you had mentioned one time, my ex-husband, this was like triggered, I think, with him. He tells me that he was out somewhere and like an auto parts store and some guy broke down and he was going to help him and the guy was gay. That's what I found. I found some pictures of a guy in our van.
Uh-huh.
And boy, he really just looked gay. And he told it was like a trigger thing, I think. It seemed like he was plugging along in his life and he had his children and then boom, you know, something happened where he got hit on. Mm-hmm. And you know, instead of, like, punching the guy out like my now husband would do, he was intrigued by it, you know. So,
well, chances are he probably had acted on it before he even married you, or he was thinking about acting on it, and he was hoping that if he married you, those feelings would go away. But I don't think, I think that women are really naive to think it takes years until these husbands act on it. Because it takes, you know, 10 seconds, really, to go into a bathroom, into a men's room, into a men's gym. Did he go to the gym much?
Was he no. He was always home, always home.
Uh-huh.
He was, I don't know. He swears to me that he didn't know for years and years, and I don't know. Who knows? I'm glad it's over, though. I'm really glad. I look back on all... I look back on all that agony and all that loneliness and the crying and, you know, he tried to go to, like, marriage weekends with me and stuff. And I mean, I just look back on the whole entire, you know, the first 5 years were fine and then it just went worse and worse and worse. And I mean, I could have done anything I wanted to do and he wouldn't have even noticed.
But let me just confirm this for both of you. Even though that you do go through so many of the different things on Wendy's recovery map, all in all, don't you feel a sense of freedom from all of the crap that you have to go through during the marriage?
Yes.
No matter
definitely.
How hard it is to start over.
Yes, and I had given up. You know, I quit trying to be, I just got tired of being rejected all the time. So I just kind of quit and just kind of kind of dissolved into nothing, I guess. I don't know. I don't remember. I didn't pay attention to it as it happened, you know, because I just couldn't understand. I just couldn't understand, but you somehow have to make it right in your mind that there's some reason, and so you just think it's you, and that's just how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I just dreaded the future. I dreaded the future with this man. Even before I knew anything, I don't want to be with him, you know?
And that's what I told him, and can you spend another 10 years like this, 20 years?
Yeah, and my family was on me about, you know, you're not happy, but they never, you know, they didn't know really why, but, and I didn't really, I felt like I didn't have a justification to do a formal, you know, dissolving of a marriage, because I believed in marriage, and I didn't feel like, you know, he hadn't slapped me, he hadn't, as far as I knew, he hadn't cheated on me, he hadn't done anything that I felt justified in stirring the pot to that point,
and
unsettling the children.
I do want to bring up that point, though, Wendy, that so often women feel, more so in these marriages than in straight marriages, because half of straight marriages get divorced.
Right.
You know,
right.
People see they're not happy and they move on. You know, they made a mistake. They were young or they grew apart and they don't have to question it a million times.
Right.
But it seems that women in these marriages married to gay men, we have to question ourselves 100 times over. You know, why are we getting a divorce? He didn't do anything really wrong just because I'm lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's because we feel so beaten down with our self-esteem and our sexual esteem that we internalize, even though you say that, you know, thank goodness it's not my fault. But on some level, through until you find out it's not your fault, you start thinking it is your fault.
Oh, absolutely. The shame was, I think the shame is what paralyzed me. I was so ashamed. I would hear people that I work with talking about how they just couldn't get their husbands off of them and things like that. And I was like, man, that sure didn't happen to me. And I was so ashamed, that I went.
And you know what, Bonnie? You mentioned something about your sexual esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do. My divorce is about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my relationship now, I've been with my husband now for four. I met him about a year after the divorce. But the sexual esteem, it's still not quite right there for me. My husband will call me beautiful, and I get so uncomfortable. I feel like I don't feel beautiful, and I, roll my eyes, oh, come on, cut it out. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very hard time taking compliments from him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. And to realize that he does want me, even if I haven't showered right before we've gone into the bedroom, because my ex-husband was so, I don't know, and things, he was just, and I always thought it was me,
And I think that's living with gay men, and, we're made to feel. Misty, can you say something about that?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's something I even do a class in that now, restoring the feminine spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And almost every straight woman I've ever worked with, that's something of us that is usually damaged. It's broken.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like it's our fault, so we just allow it and we neglect it and we don't address it. We just sort of sweep it under the rug, but it's very important to honor ourselves as women. We forget how to do that. And and not only do we forget how to do it, I say, I know this happened to myself and to many other women I work with, I say we put ourselves into, remission.
Mm-hmm.
We put our femininity into that remission, and we just hold it there. We don't honor it. And we do that for several reasons. One is rejection. Two is we think it's our fault. Like you said, we think that, maybe it's me. I don't look right. I don't smell right. Whatever it is, we make it our fault and we internalize it. So a lot of us have a lot of issues around our femininity. And I know in one of the classes I just taught, it's so interesting how universal this is. And I've worked with the women in a lot of different backgrounds from a lot of different countries. This is very universal that the feminine spirit is broken. But the good news is, our human spirit is resilient. So can be our femininity. And you just have to work on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still working on that one.
Yeah, you have to do those things that make you feel like a beautiful woman. And I tell everyone, beauty has nothing to do with size, shape, or color.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a mental attitude. How do you feel about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
If you can see women of all different shapes,
mm-hmm.
all different sizes, all different colors, and you can really look at that woman and tell, is she confident? Does she feel beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really an attitude.
Yeah.
It really is. So,
I'm not there.
I encourage you to work on it because it's important. That is important of who we are. And unfortunately, that's one of the things that can be so damaged because it's something that we become neglectful of, almost ashamed of, because we feel like it's something we've done.
Well, Bonnie has mentioned this before, that there's a prototype that gay men marry, and I think so. I think this goes even farther back, at least for me, that was the femininity part was very weak in me from the early on. I just, the relationship with your family, and I was raised with four girls, but we were never the girly girl. We were never encouraged to be the girly girl type of girl and all those kind of things. And so I think I started out with a deficit. And then now, and then you go through a marriage with someone who's gay, and then you're really at a deficit. So
are you saying there's a I never heard that before. There's a prototype that gay men marry because
Bonnie
could tell you starting
about that quite a bit that they are attracted to a woman who's not overly feminine because that's
I never heard that.
Yeah, no, I have a whole checklist in my book, the Gay Husband Checklist, of the women
that
they out.
That's amazing to me. And what I found out too when I started dating again was that men were really impressed that I could tell you the starting lineup of the 1984 Tigers. You know, I made All-State in basketball. You know, I'm not gay, but I'm not the most feminine.
Right.
I mean, I know my sports. You know, and men were like, "Wow, that's great!" And I was their buddy, and I seemed to, you know. But it's funny, I never heard that before.
Well, the thing is that, you know, these guys are predators, a lot of them. And, you know, they're looking for women who, if they do marry them, are not going to question too much, who are going to be accepting. A lot of it's based on they can sense that you have a sense of low self-esteem. And it could be because, number one, you know, for me it was I'm overweight. You know, I had a struggle with that my whole life, so my self-esteem was never high. But it could be for so many reasons, because self-esteem is internal, it's not external. I meet women who are Fortune 500 workers who are models or actresses who have low self-esteem, and they're beautiful.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But these guys know how to find you, and, you know, that's what they're looking for, because when the news comes out, they don't want someone who's going to feel strong enough to say, I'm not dealing with this, I'm walking away.
Mm-hmm.
They want someone who's going to be able to accept them. And a lot of times they seek out women who have had sexual abuse in their lives because they know they're not going to be very sexual, or they grew up in a very religious environment and they haven't had much sexual experience. So they don't know what to compare it to.
So they're not going to demand a really masculine man type thing,
mm-hmm.
I think, is what, you know. And that was one of the things that initially attracted me to my husband. It was he was not into all the sports. He was not a big hang with the guys, all that kind of stuff. I liked that part.
I think a lot of us made the mistake because these guys were respectful to us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't getting us in bed right away.
Right.
That they said that they didn't really valued who we were and they didn't feel the need to have to sleep with us right away.
Right.
You know, so we looked at that as a plus rather than as a minus.
As being a gentleman, right.
Exactly. That's why I said when you're looking for a guy again, if he doesn't want to touch you, he's gay. You have to really, you know, realize it is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
That we're flattered
I have a long way
at the
to go.
Beginning, you know, because usually guys are just all over you. And here are guys who care about what you think. You know, they care about what you have to say. They care about, you know, they care about all the things that you would like them to care about.
Sure.
So that's why we're, you know, thrown off. Now, as far as, like, stereotypes are concerned, I know that my ex-husband was very macho. So he was, you know, a sports person. So that's why I was thrown off. You know, I certainly would never suspect someone who was so athletic and so involved in sports, you know, to be able to, you know, to be gay. You know, I was also... And I was pretty worldly. You know, I lived in California when I was younger and New York when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw all kinds of gay people, and yet it still didn't dawn on me that this would be gay. I mean, so, because gay looks different wherever you are.
Yeah.
Okay.
But as long
well,
as
that's
you know,
good.
As long as you know your husband's straight now, Kelly, that's what really counts.
Oh, well, who's ever sure? I'm as sure can be, you know. But, yeah, I mean, he doesn't look at gay porn. That's the big thing.
Well, that's
you know?
A big thing, and he wants to make love.
You
to
know,
you, right?
I actually, one thing I actually did while I was trying to work my marriage out, and I realized my husband was interested in gay porn, I actually said, I thought it was weird, and I didn't like it, but I actually did tell him that, well, it's just fantasy, you know, as long as it's not something you act on, as long as it's between us, as long as it's private. And I can't believe that I actually did that I allowed it to go into our bedroom as a couple.
Well,
you know?
I think that's because we're always bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always saying, like, you know, how much can we live with? And I know there was a time in my marriage, early in my marriage, when I said to my husband when I first found something out, and I said to him, well, if once every 6 months you have to go away and I don't know where you are and you have to do something and it's with a consenting adult and I never have to know about it, I can live with it. Because I was playing that game, what can I live with? Because I didn't want to break up my marriage.
Right, and you're told when you get married there's certain things you learn that you have to put up with and nobody's perfect. And so I spent many years trying to figure out what, you know, what can I live with, or like you said, or what seems not so bad, but, you know, well, he's like this, but I'm like this, so, you know, you're told not to keep score, and
mm-hmm.
and I just, I really believe that, you know, I was raised with marriage is marriage, and you make it work out, and everybody else has problems, too, and you've got to work yours out, so.
Exactly.
That's because
we just don't understand what this problem is really about.
Yeah, yeah, and as Kelly said, once you know that, it does. It's a great relief, and you just, it all is like, oh, my gosh, you know, maybe it wasn't me.
Well, listen, Kelly, while you're on the phone, I'd like for Wendy to finish up her recovery map and see.
Okay.
Absolutely.
This is her
future. See if you've made it to this day, because I'm not there.
See if you've lived through any of this.
Okay, I'm on the last one that, you know, when I first showed this to Bonnie, I had a blank and a big question mark because I had no idea, and kind of encouraged me to think about what might be there, and part of me didn't want to go there, and then part of me, I've worked it through, so... I call it acceptance or becoming whole, and maybe I'm dreaming here. This sounds pretty amazing, this stage here, but I have on here, it may include acceptance of self, acceptance of my circumstances, making peace with the past, new goals, less pain and more joy, I hope that's there, contentment, giving back, paying forward the help and support received along the way, that's very important to me. Disclosure with my nearly adult children, which I hope occurs this summer. I'm gonna do what you did and say, look, it's gonna come out this summer. It's either gonna be from me or you, and I hope it's you. But self-sufficiency, feminine spirit restored or being revived, and I got that from Misty after listening to some shows that really summarizes it pretty well, I think. Finding new hobbies and interests and or revisiting old ones, and I'm starting to do more of that. Feeling whole, lighter steps, looking back with satisfaction, finding a new partner, maybe, maybe not, and trusting myself. And I think trusting others, too, goes in there. So I'm just kind of estimating maybe that's where I'll be. I don't know.
And I think it will take time, but I think you're definitely going to get there. You're definitely on the road.
I hope so. For the sake of my kids, if nothing else, yeah.
Right, and for the sake of your own healing.
Yes, yes. And, yeah, I feel like I've battled through so much. It's just amazing to look back on it. And I think, I don't know who's listening now, who's just at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never would have dreamed I'd get where I am. I never would have thought I could have done it. And there are a lot of people along the way. But ultimately, you have to find you're stronger than you think you are. And thank goodness to this support group, really, really. I can't tell you how important it is. And being able to be anonymous,
mm-hmm.
so important. I live here in the South, and I wasn't raised here, but I live here. And there's just a lot of judgment out there, and there's people that I will never tell because I just, until I get real comfortable with it to be able to explain it, they're gonna make judgment and not even listen to what I have to say about, you know, you should have known, that kind of thing.
Right,
so,
and I think that, you know, that's so true that people don't understand, and they say, well, how come you didn't know he was gay?
Yeah.
You know, rather than think that it's his fault, you know, once again, mm-hmm. it becomes your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Or he wasn't gay when you married him, how did he become gay?
And there's some people that I know that will never understand that, or, you know, you should have prayed him out of it. I get some of that.
mm-hmm. And I always tell women, you can't pray away the gay, and no matter how hard people
so,
try to do it.
I've made the decision to disclose where I feel like I can handle it and the other person can handle it and not disclose in other places. And, you know, that's what's comfortable for me because I think it puts a burden on that other person, too. And then, you know, they just can't handle it, and they can't keep their mouth shut. And I don't need any more gossip in my life. And just the nature of all that I've been through, there's just been so, because we work in the same school district, and it's just all, with all this legal stuff and all that, there's just so much of that going on, and I want that behind me now. I don't want to deal with that anymore.
Well, I think it's important to say that women, you know, have to make that choice on who they choose to tell
and
who they choose not to tell.
Yes.
And it's really nobody's business. But I do say that if you want to tell, you know, then you should tell. Right,
and I feel myself getting stronger and being able to handle this better now.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm ready to talk to my kids about it.
Right, and that could be step one.
Yeah.
And, you know, but a lot of times these men always tell you, well, you can't tell anybody. You know, they want
to stay in their closet.
Even though that they're out there telling who they want to tell. But you better not tell my family. You better not tell your family.
And one difference I think that what I'm hearing from other people is I don't think he right now, I think after he went through all this legal mess and this accusation and all of this, I think that scared, sounds like cliche, it scared him straight back again. I mean, I don't think he's acting straight, but I think he's not actively acting gay. I think he's just staying under the radar right now. Because as far as he's telling his colleagues, he was reinstated and everything was done wrong, and so he's sure not going to mess that up until he's in a job now that he doesn't really like and he's still looking for something better. But that part about how your kid's handling having men over and all that, that's a phase we have not had to deal with, and I don't know that we ever will. That would be very bizarre for me to deal with, too.
That was very difficult for me, I know, when my kids were younger. Having to first accept that my husband was gay and then having to accept the fact that they were going to be there with him and his gay, you know, friends.
Yeah, and I don't know whether he will ever get to that point or not.
How do you feel about that, Kelly?
It's been extremely difficult for my children, and it's been extremely difficult for... And I did tell my ex-husband at one time because, you know, this boyfriend was dropping the kids off at my house instead of him.
Oh,
and I said,
listen,
and I can't really do anything about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the courts will look at you and tell you it's not a crime to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's nothing you can do. And I did say to him one time, I'm like, listen, you would not like it if I had a different guy dropping the kids off at your house.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't, it doesn't matter whether you're gay or not. And, you know, that got through him for a minute. But, it's been really, I know they're not pedophiles because they're gay, but, you know,
right.
He's got these guys there that are literally 7-8 years older than my oldest son that he's with.
Uh-huh.
And they're having their fun in the backyard, you know, in swimsuits and yanking on each other. And, yeah, I don't like it.
Very hard for kids to go through that.
And the only thing I can do is talk to my kids and tell them, listen, you know what's right, you know what's wrong, you know if any of this, and that's it. Anything seems weird, you immediately tell me, and, you know, I don't think their dad would let anything happen to them, so that's the only consolation I have.
Yeah, that's very difficult.
It is very difficult. And I do understand that, you know, when men move on in their lives, you know, they don't want to have to keep that hidden from their children either. But I think there has to be a balance somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, Bonnie, that got me is that, you know, my oldest son just told me, I'm so uncomfortable, Dad driving us to school 4 days out of the month, and they're holding hands in the front seat. And it does get me because it's like, listen, you got 22 days a month where you don't have the kids.
Exactly.
Right.
You got 8 days that you're a father. Just be a father. But
exactly.
No, he's
that's
got to intertwine everything.
Yes.
And... You know, 22 days out of the month when you're alone, do what you want to do then. The rest of the month, just be a dad. Oh, my gosh, no, he can't. Some boyfriend always got to come along.
Wow.
So,
I know.
Like you've recovered much farther than he has. As far as,
well,
she was married a shorter amount of time, so maybe that's why it was easier.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think the longer
they stay
in these marriages, the more debilitating they are, and the longer they take to recover from. You had 27
years,
Wendy.
Yes.
And
you know, I will say one good thing that's happened with my husband and my kids is, you know, for so long I did it. He was basically an absent father, and now he's having to step up and remember their birthdays and call them and act interested in them. And he's restored a better relationship than he ever had with them. So I will say that has been a benefit for my kids. Now, I think now that he's doing that, he's developing a stronger relationship. I think this summer is time for him to come clean with them.
Absolutely.
And I think they will accept it better I just feel like I can't be dishonest to my kids now. It's driving me nuts.
And you know what? I missed the beginning, but how long has it been since you've known?
Let's see, about 4 years. Not even.
Yeah.
Not even. My kids were about, well, my daughter was in college and my son was in high school when I found out.
Yeah.
And
so, because there was so much more crisis going on along with all of this, that I couldn't drop another bomb on them. I just couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're kind of coming out of that and they're adjusted and into what's going on now, I think it's time, and I think they will be fine with it.
And
they,
in fact,
they
I'm
will.
Surprised that they already know it.
Right.
Right.
And I just want them to understand. And when we started all this divorce, I wrote letters to my kids and just about the divorce process, because I understand, no matter what the age, no matter, you know, what the stage, it's devastating to a child and their whole world falls apart. And so I just had to keep reassuring them that I was doing the right thing, that I was doing what was in the best interest of them and of me. And I had to let them know that I didn't know what they were going through, because I was not a child of divorce. So I was sorry that they were going through it, but I really didn't understand how they were feeling. And just to reassure them that I was doing it in their best interest.
Let me just
and
ask
so,
you this question, Wendy. Did they feel a sense of abandonment through all those years by their father?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because
he wasn't just not there for you. He wasn't there for them either, right?
Right. And you know, that's when I started noticing that as the kids got a little older, that he was kind of acting uninterested in them, like he had been acting uninterested in me. And it was kind of a light bulb for me, like, okay, this is not just me. This is the way he operates with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of revealing to me that it wasn't just me. He was aloof with everybody because
mm-hmm.
he was so self-absorbed. And that was kind of a little red flag for me. I didn't quite know what to do with it at the time. But he came from a family where, oh, my goodness, you know, he just had to achieve to be – he was never good enough,
mm-hmm.
had to achieve, and still is living under that. Where he had to be the best of the best of the best, and if he wasn't, why wasn't he? And my heart goes out to him in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so for if that's hard enough for a person, let alone a gay person.
Absolutely.
You know.
Well, anyway, ladies, believe it or not, we've run out of our time.
Oh my goodness!
You kept us going the whole night. You've been wonderful, right, Miss Faith?
Absolutely, it's been a great.
Well, it's been very helpful for
Wendy,
me. Very therapeutic.
It's been very therapeutic for us. And Kelly, I can't thank you enough for calling.
Yes.
And adding your input. And I hope you
Well, know. I'm glad I did. Thank you.
Yeah, and don't make it your last call. Call us anytime.
Okay.
Always happy
okay.
to talk to you. All right, ladies, thank you so much.
Thank
and
you.
Misty and I are just going to say goodnight and clear up a couple things. And
okay.
we'll be talking to you soon. And thank you for, if anybody would like to receive Wendy's recovery chart, please email me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you a copy of this month's newsletter that has the recovery chart printed out. Put it on your refrigerator. That's what I've done with it now, because I'm such awe of it, Wendy. I just keep looking over and over and over it.
Oh, my
thinking,
goodness.
Where did Wendy come up with all this wonderful stuff? How are you able to put into words what I've never been able to say? So I think it's just beautiful, and thank you so
well,
much,
thank
Wendy.
Thank you. I hope it's helpful. I hope it's helpful.
It certainly is. I'll be sending it to everybody from now on.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for including me, and keep
thank
up the
you.
Good work.
And Kelly, thank you so much again also.
And thank you too, Kelly.
Okay. So,
all
Misty,
right. Good night.
Good night. Misty, any final words you'd like to say?
Yeah, I'd like to say a couple of things here. The first off, I'd like to say in your newsletter, how it's been 9 years. Wow. Thank
mm-hmm.
you for being so committed to Straight Wives. And it's like you say, there's so much to talk about. I guess it all can't be covered, even though it may be hard sometimes to write those newsletters. You can always go back and pull up something because there's always another topic to discuss. So thank you so much for Straight Wives. On behalf of Straight Wives out there, thank you for all the information you've done, all the time and effort and heartfelt attention you've given it. We certainly appreciate it. You're welcome. Thank you. And one other thing that's important to me I'd like to say is, you know, a lot of times we get all called up and afraid to tell our parents about these stories. You know, when we have our parents still living, even though we're adult children, it's difficult to tell our parents what happened to our marriage. So I'd also like to bring up that my parents are very supportive. I'm so lucky. And they're such avid listeners of the show. So I appreciate their support, and I'm glad to know that they're here listening. And to all adult children out there that have their parents, you know, you'd be surprised sometimes. Parents can sometimes understand this and be supportive. So it's wonderful when that happens, and it really is. It's just much, it just helps the whole process. It truly does. So I think that's about it for me.
All right, guys. Well, listen, we'll be back here next week. Hi to Misty's parents, and have a good night. Bye-bye.
Have a good night, Bonnie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.